Support for the Exchange Friday New Hampshire News Roundup is made possible by Centrix Bank. See beyond with Centrix Bank.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Canoy, and this is The Exchange. It's our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup. Campaign 2014 heats up, big-name politicians are lending a hand to Granite State candidates. New Jersey Governor Chris Christie returned to New Hampshire this week to drum up support for the Republican ticket. Here's Christie on U.S. Senate candidate Scott Brown's desire to return to national office.
Now that is an unusual trait to find these days. It's someone who is actually willing to go to Washington, D.C. But this is somebody who has seen it, and he's actually willing to go back there. That is a fighter, everybody. That's somebody who's willing to fight for New Hampshire.
In State House political news this week, lawmakers returned to Concord to vote on three of Governor Hassan's vetoes, including a bill to ensure privacy for lottery winners. Here's Republican Representative Neil Kirk defending that idea.
When their names are made public, lottery winners risk scammers and thieves, unwanted and intrusive attention from charities, financial advisors, and newfound friends and relatives.
Meanwhile, more top honors came in for a UNH professor. Mathematician Tom Zhang was awarded the MacArthur Genius Grant this week. Here he is describing his childhood during the Cultural Revolution in China and his early interest in math.
During the Cultural Revolution in China, I didn't have a chance to continue my even the high school education. But I got some books from bookstores. I learned mathematics myself.
It's our Friday New Hampshire News Roundup today in The Exchange, and let's hear from you on these stories and more. Call in The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. Our guests for this week's roundup are Rick Stevens, Northern New England correspondent for the Associated Press. Rick, welcome back. Nice to see you.
Nice to be back.
Also with us, Dean Spiliotis, civic scholar in the School of Arts and Sciences at Southern New Hampshire University, author of the website, nhpoliticalcapital.com. And Dean, good to see you too. Thanks for being here.
Good morning, Laura.
Well, everyone, the nation's attention this week focused on the militant group ISIS or Islamic State. The U.S. House voted on Wednesday to give the administration authority to aid and train Syrian rebels, and then the U.S. Senate followed suit on Thursday. It's worth noting for us here in the Granite State how New Hampshire's delegation voted. Rick Stevens, what can you give us there?
It's interesting that the delegation on the, in the House split. Ann Custer voted to support the legislation, and Carol Shea Porter voted to oppose it. In the Senate, both of our senators did support the president's request. But this is an issue that hasn't really broken down along political lines in any way, shape, or form. The president gained some Republican supporters, lost some key Democratic supporters. In the end, both houses did or both chambers did pass it. This is one that hasn't or rather has kind of polarized people along personal lines. There seems to be real thought going into the vote, not just it's anti-democratic or it's anti-Republican. The supporters say we've got to do something. We've got to take a step. We've got to at least start something over there. Opponents worry that that we don't know where this these arms and this training is going to end up. We've seen so-called moderate Syrians suddenly switch to the other side, so we don't know. That was their big concern. That's certainly what Congresswoman Shea Porter was concerned about, was that they just don't know where it's going to end up.
Yeah, give us a little more on Congresswoman Carol Shea Porter, please, Rick, because she's the outlier, at least in terms of our four-person delegation. She's the only one who said no.
She is. She's in a tough race. Dean might be able to better sort of assess the political polarity there or the dynamic there than I am. That race is tightening up since the primary for sure. And I think we've got some big name campaigners coming in for Frank Inta, yes?
Sure. Go ahead, Dean.
Yeah, sure. It was interesting. We got to see, if you watched any of the news coverage, we got to see both Senator Shaheen and Senator Ayotte on the Senate Armed Services Committee quite closely questioning the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff about this about this issue. You know, on the House side, the Carol Shea Porter's position is one that you hear from most of the people who oppose this this action. And the concern is, as Rick alluded to, you know, is it even clear kind of who the appropriate rebels are to arm and train in Syria? You know, you got to remember that initially ISIS was kind of one of the biggest foes of President Assad, and then they kind of broke off and started with this other issue. So it's very complicated in terms of you know, which rebels you train and whether or not they're even going to be effective. In addition, I think Congresswoman Shea Porter said she's concerned to make sure that the other nations in the region kind of do their fair share. You know, there's been this kind of diplomacy and commitment garnered from Secretary of State Kerry to get these other countries involved. And, you know, Carol Shea Porter said, you know, it's not clear that the rebels are in a position to really benefit from all this money, and B, we don't really know for sure that these other countries are going to pull their weight. Now, you know, also breaking with the president, you know, this is kind of a, I think, a kind of a secondary matter, but, you know, one of the arguments you get in a campaign is that members, you know, the Democratic members of the House always vote with President Obama. So there's a little bit of that, but I think in this case it was really more based on concerns that both Democrats and Republicans have voiced about the effectiveness of the Syrian rebels and the willingness of other states in the region to kind of carry their weight.
Yeah, go ahead, Rick.
Dean, getting back to the notion, too, of this being a personal vote, not just simply, as you just alluded to, you know, not just the political vote.
Yeah, I don't think that was the main driver here.
This is deeply personal for the New Hampshire delegation, too. Don't forget, I believe Ann Custer invoked James Foley and Stephen Sotloff, the two journalists who were murdered by the Islamic State militants. And in fact, they've invoked their names during the floor debate on this. So this is one that hits close to home for the New Hampshire folks.
All right. Well, good to catch up on what New Hampshire's delegation is doing. And I'm sure on the Diane Rehm Friday News Roundup, they'll be covering this in more detail. But thank you for that update, guys. It's an important story. The number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. It's the Friday New Hampshire News Roundup today in the Exchange. We'd love to hear from you. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. In other political news right here in the state, Rick, there was some more follow-up to the recent legislative session that closed out in June, including a couple votes on Governor Hassan's vetoes. What were these vetoes about, Rick?
There were three primary vetoes. We can start off with the Workplace Bullying Act. This was one that would have established rules and directives for handling workplace harassment and bullying behavior. This was very strongly supported by the union.
The state employees union. Would have only applied to state employees, not
correct.
Everyone.
Correct. But one of the worries of the folks who voted to uphold Governor Hassan's veto was that eventually it could trickle into the private sector. It could lead to, a sort of a flood of litigation as these things came out. It's sort of an odd, and Dean may be able to amplify this better. It's precarious politics because the governor now has to kind of go against the State Employees Association, which, you know, as a Democratic governor, she generally gets the support of unions. So the House did, in fact, uphold her veto. Look for that to come back again next year, though, measure. Probably, yeah. I would expect maybe all three of these main ones to come back. The other one was the juvenile justice, a reorganization of the juvenile justice system, or rather the board that oversees the juvenile justice system. This stems from some problems down at the Sununu Center, but they also kind of allude to systemic issues of mismanagement, of mistreatment, et cetera, of employees. This veto was upheld. They couldn't get it through the Senate. They fell two votes short.
Of, wow, that's close.
Yeah, it was close. But this relates to problems at the Student Center. The bill passed both chambers, but they couldn't overcome the hurdle. This one again, according to the state, our new State House reporter Kathleen Ronan tells me that this one will also be back next session, so look for that to come back.
As we often see in New Hampshire, these bills come up again and again. And there was another one concerning privacy rights for lottery winners, Dean. Now, correct me if I'm wrong. I thought that when you bought a lottery ticket, there was sort of an understanding that said, you know, if I happen to win, you know, I agree to have my picture taken and you know, have be put out there?
Well, you know, I think it varies by state. If I am correct, that, you know, in some states you can protect your privacy and decide not to let it be known that you won. You know, not everybody wants to be a target if they've won millions of dollars in a lottery. So, you know, I think this bill, the bill was to allow individuals to decide whether or not to keep their names private, and that ability was vetoed, and the veto was not overridden. So, I guess you're not going to be able to maintain your privacy. The thing I want to say on these other bills that Rick mentioned, I think the two big ones, the anti-bullying and the juvenile justice attempted overrides, on both of those, I believe the governor has promised to take other actions to kind of make up for the fact that she vetoed these bills. So that's going to be the real test for her to see whether she follows up in, you know, additional measures to deal with anti-bullying, additional measures to deal with reconstituting the juvenile justice system. So that's going to be her challenge, having made those promises to these various groups like the labor unions.
Yeah, Rick, go ahead.
First, on juvenile justice, she did promise last summer, actually, to do something, and now the union has said you need to speed it up. On the lottery, it's important to note, too, that the reason for the veto was that the governor thought we need to keep this lottery transparent. Mm-hmm. You need to be able to know who they are to make sure that there's no shenanigans going on. That's the way it was founded 50 years ago.
I want to ask you real quickly, Rick, on something else that the AP covered. This year's cuts to the nation's food stamp program only affected four states, and lucky us, including New Hampshire.
New Hampshire's following the rules. They cut the many states were following or going through a loophole that allowed them to provide more in food stamp benefits for people who also took heating assistance.
The so-called heat and eat provision.
Yeah, the heat and eat provision, exactly. New Hampshire has said, we're going to follow the rules. We have ways that we can make sure that these people are getting both done. But many, many states are not, including several states in New England as well.
Well, and this relates to another story that you guys covered. New data showing a falling poverty rate here in the Granite State, Rick.
Yeah, I'm going to start that with an asterisk, though, because the numbers are a little fuzzy, as a lot of data can be. Poverty rate did show a 1.3% decline. That's some 17,000 fewer people in 2013 compared to 2012. But again, the numbers need to be looked at with a little skeptical eye, just because they could fall within a margin of error.
All right. Well, coming up after a short break, we'll get the real story behind all those political ads that you may be seeing on television, hearing in the radio, stuffed into your mailbox. We'll talk with the Nashua Telegraph's PolitiFact Project. We'll look at that story. Also, another chance to freeze tuition at the University of New Hampshire. We'll find out more. This is the Friday New Hampshire News Roundup on NHPR. This is the Friday New Hampshire News Roundup on NHPR. I'm Laura Kanoy. We now turn to politics and specifically political advertising. Joining us now in studio is Jonathan Van Fleet. He's managing editor for content at the Telegraph of Nashua and editor of PolitiFact New Hampshire. And Jonathan, welcome back. It's good to see you.
Good to see you too, Laura.
Well, just remind us what PolitiFact is all about.
Okay, PolitiFact is trying to figure out the truth in politics, right? So everyone's hit with this is the time of year, you know, hit with the surge of advertising everywhere you look, radio, TV, mailbox, as you said, everywhere. There's all these claims about different politicians. And people are trying to figure out, is this true? Is this a lie? Is this person, you know, all wet? And so we try and get in there, do some of the dirty work, do some of the digging and say, this is true, this is false. Hey, this has a kernel of truth. This is misleading. And so, you know, we try and give people a little guidance in terms of what they're hearing and what's true and what's false.
You've got a little truth-o-meter, which is sort of all true, half true, really not true, and then pants on fire, I think.
Love
is the
truth-o-meter. Love the pants on fire.
Yeah. How much do you think people, and I'll ask Dean this too, but Jonathan, how much do you think people are really engaging with this? I mean, it's great that you guys are doing it, but how much are people taking time out to actually say, you know, I heard this about Gene Shaheen. Is that true?
It depends. You know, some of the more complicated fact checks, it's true. People are like, well, I'm not even going to pay attention to that.
It's too complicated.
However, John Oliver on This Week Tonight on HBO had said that Keene, New Hampshire used applied for a federal grant to buy a bear cat, you know, and that turned out to be true because they want in their application they cited the Pumpkin Festival. And so when we fact checked John Oliver, guess what? thousands upon thousands upon thousands of people gravitated to that fact check. You know, if we're going to check, say, someone's tax returns, maybe we're not going to get quite the return on readership.
And by the way, this is part of a national project, right?
It Jonathan? Absolutely is. Yeah. PolitiFact National does fact checks every day. There's pundit facts checking people who are on the radio who are not elected officials, you know, on TV, Fox News shows, whatnot. And there are 9 states right now that are checking. And the Telegraph is the only newspaper that's doing it right now. And I would love for every newspaper in the state to do this because there's way more ads to check than we have time to do.
Interesting. Well, and Dean, mm-hmm. what do you think about this? I mean, you know, everybody sitting in this room is obviously very interested and loves checking the truth-o-meter. Is it half true? Is it all true? But what about the average person, Dean? I mean, how much do they believe these ads anyway? And B, if they're curious, how much do they take the time to check out these PolitiFacts?
Yeah, and I think I've said many times before that at some point during the election cycle, there's such saturation of these campaign ads on television that people largely tune them out as white noise. You know, I think in general, these kinds of ad watches and political fact-checking features are a good thing. They've proliferated both nationally and across a number of different media outlets. So, you know, the thinking is that there's enough of this going on in a lot of different venues, whether it's the Telegraph or the national website or the New York Times will vet certain ads for their truth. So I think, you know, I think there's sort of a broad enough reach of these kinds of features that most people are seeing some, if not all, and I think that's probably a good thing. Part of the problem, though, is that the media outlets themselves have become targets for ideological attacks. So the New York Times vets a Republican campaign ad, and Republicans say, well, that's the New York Times. That's a Democratic newspaper. So this is not bulletproof. It takes a lot for everybody to agree on whether or not the source is a non-biased source. And I think, you know, this sort of PolitiFact is one that a lot of people rely on nationally. On balance, I think it's a good thing. I think most people see some of this, but it's not foolproof in terms of settling. And I think there's just one final thing. I think it's important because increasingly as more outside money comes into the state, what I've found is the ads tend to be sort of more outlandish and
they
sort
get
of
wilder and
detached
wilder,
from reality, right? Yeah. Because they're done by national media firms who don't really understand the culture in the state. It's funded by outside sources. So they come up with these ads that really bear no relation to the reality of politics in the state. And so I think it is important that people keep that in mind when they watch some of these ads.
All right. Again, the number for you to join us on the Friday New Hampshire News Roundup is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Again, 1-800-892-6477. One more question, Jonathan, about PolitiFact and sure. what you guys are doing at the Telegraph of Nashua. So what are some of the major claims that you're tracking for New Hampshire right now? How about the U.S. Senate race?
That's huge, obviously, because the amount of money that they are that's coming into that race. So we use just that kind of that really factor. When someone says something in an ad, we say, really? Is that true? And so the most recent check we did earlier this week was an ad from the Senate Majority PAC. They're targeting Scott Brown.
So these are the Democrats.
These are the Democrats. So they're targeting Scott Brown for profiting from a company that exported jobs to China. And at the end of that ad, they say New Hampshire lost more jobs to China than any other state in the country.
I've heard that statistic a couple times.
So, you know, it's really more than anybody. So we went in there and, you know, we ruled that half true. OK, so there's a kernel of truth to that, but it is a distortion of the fact. So it's as a percentage of the workforce. Yes, it's true that New Hampshire lost more jobs than any other state. But in sheer numbers, it's nowhere near the most jobs lost. And so, you know, as a kernel of truth, it's meant to mislead. Therefore, it's half true. And I'll tell you, some people thought that, OK, you know, half true, that's the chicken ruling, that it should be. It's wrong, so it's false. You know, it's mostly false. Don't give it a half true, but you know, it fits the definition for the claim.
Okay, so that's the Democrats going after Republican Scott Brown. How about on the Republican side?
Okay, so a couple weeks ago, Scott Brown took out an ad Actually, no, the Ending Spending PAC took out an ad claiming that Jean Shaheen's wealth has surged while she was in office. And, you know, that made the headlines because she said this is patently false. The ad needs to be taken down. I believe one station actually did take the ad down, and it was amended to say that she's enriched herself while she's in office. Well, we can't really – that's a little too vague for us to check. So we checked the original ad that her wealth has surged while she's been in office. And her tax returns show that her net worth has actually gone down while she's been in office, but her assets have gone up. So what does that mean? You can buy a Lamborghini, and so you have the trappings of wealth, but you have this debt that it's associated with it. So that on balance was a mostly false. It wasn't as patently false as the Jean Shaheen camp
as the dollar number.
Yes, but you know, that we felt that was the correct ruling.
Again, the number for you to join us here in the exchange, 1-800-892-6477. Our guests for this segment of the Friday New Hampshire News Roundup are Jonathan Van Fleet, managing editor for content at the Telegraph of Nashua. Rick Stevens is here, Northern New England correspondent for the Associated Press. And Dean Spiliotis, author of the website nhpoliticalcapital.com. Gentlemen, I did want to ask you about energy and how this is, we just reading more and more about this, not only in terms of politics, but in terms of capacity. And here in New England, governors want more oil and gas pipeline capacity. Local towns, though, sometimes, Jonathan, are less than thrilled to host those pipelines. There's been a couple of headlines about this. What about in southern New Hampshire?
Less than thrilled is an understatement. So Hollis, New Hampshire, is dealing with this. They've got a special town meeting this Saturday where they've got 14 different Warren articles to count the ways in which they oppose this new pipeline. And, you know, the Kinder Morgan application for this pipeline has just hit the feds, and so the process is really beginning. I look at it as kind of akin to the Northern Pass, you know, that people are saying, not in my backyard, not can't do this, you can't take my property rights, you're not going to be able to do this. You know, and if the folks down in southern New Hampshire and the folks up north could get together, they might find success as friends.
Yeah, and this has been an issue elsewhere in New Hampshire too, Dean, in terms of gas pipelines, oil pipelines. What's the big picture here, Dean? As New England struggles to improve capacity, it's devil's in the details, to use an old cliche.
Absolutely. And it is about increasing capacity because as prices rise, you look for additional sources in order to bring supply up so that the prices can come down a little bit. You know, this is a very common problem. We see this with any sort of big energy project, whether it's wind or fracking or what have you. There's just this concern about, yes, we need more capacity, but there are trade-offs in terms of natural beauty, safety, et cetera. So, you know, we just saw Governor Hassan sign a number of bills in the North Country that all the three of them deal with increasing safeguards against pipeline oil spills.
Yeah, this and is all, oil, not natural
yeah, oil,
gas.
Yeah, oil, but it's all sort of, you know, all kind of part of the larger energy picture is
sure.
We want to, you know, run these pipelines through the state, whether it's oil or natural gas. There are dangers. There are natural impact on the natural environment. And, you know, the problem is getting these. So there was this proposal to expand this natural gas pipeline up to Nova Scotia. And it's the same sort of thing where it could work if it can get through the regulatory review. And that's where things start to bog down, because if it gets the appropriate permitting, then you have to deal with potential lawsuits. So as we've seen with Northern Pass and with a number of these big wind projects in the state, the devil is in the details. Getting through the review process has become tremendously difficult. So there's a need for increased capacity, but the reality of getting it done is proving to be difficult.
Go ahead, Rick. What do you think?
Yeah, Glenn, Dean, I'm glad you mentioned the proposal that I think NHPR Sam Evans Brown had reported on this week. This is the pipeline, the Northeast Utilities and Spectra Energy Pipeline. That one alone, that expansion alone, is estimated to produce up to 1 billion cubic feet of gas a day. That's what the region would need just to alleviate all these winter price spikes. But you've still got to, as Dean and Jonathan wisely point out, you've got to get past the regulatory hurdles. You hear all of the candidates, the buzz phrase these days for energy is, I'm an all of the above candidate. I want to have all of the above, but not where I live. And so that's going to be the tricky balance that they've got to try and strike, is that where do you put it And who's going to end up being the loser? Who's going to end up having a pipeline run through their backyard?
Yeah, it's interesting. And you do hear that from candidates from Obama to Scott Brown, you know, Republicans,
right,
Democrats.
Down to the local level, sure.
From all
yeah.
the above. Yep. But don't put it behind my house or, you know, behind my local park. All right, the phone number for you to join us here in the Friday New Hampshire News Roundup is 1-800-892-6477. Email us if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. There was more talk, Jonathan, this week of another tuition freeze at the University of New Hampshire. What's going on?
Well, they'd like another $100 million a year to freeze tuition for another 2 years. So a few years ago, the legislature at this point famously gave a huge cut to the university system, and they did their best to kind of contract and also, you know, keep educating their students and keeping in line with their mission. So some of that money was restored, and they froze tuition for 2 years. And that was obviously a good thing. And so they're looking to do that again, and they need support from the legislature. They're asking for $100 million a year to do so.
Now, they got $100 million in the last budget cycle. Is
yes,
that right, Jonathan?
True.
So mm-hmm. they're asking for $100 million on top of that, like $200 million total, or just another $100
yeah,
million?
Yeah, so they want the funding to restored pre-cut level, so back to what it was in 2009.
Okay. And so, of course, parents of students and students are probably hoping that tuition will be frozen. It's kind of unusual, isn't it, Rick or Dean, to freeze tuition? I mean, that's not something you hear about every day.
Oh, no, it is. It is being faced by other university systems around the country, but a tuition freeze, and if they actually get it, if they're successful, this means the class of 2017 would see no tuition increases for their entire, if they graduate in 4 years. Important to note, tuition is $13,670 at UNH. It's a little it varies from the various state colleges, but yeah, it would be fairly unique if they could do it.
And Jonathan, just a point of clarification, is this just UNH Durham, the big campus, or is it also Plymouth and Keene?
I believe it's the University System of New Hampshire. And, you know, to add to this, you know, famously, the New Hampshire students have some of the highest debt loads in the country. We were worst in the country on that level, and now we're second worst.
Yeah, we keep going back and forth. Highest debt burden, second highest debt burden.
And so I did a little bit of math with one of these student loan calculators. So the average debt being about $32,000 a year, a graduate has that money, they'll pay $209 a month for 30 years, and the payoff on that $32,000 of debt is $75,000. So that's a ton of dough. When these students graduate, you know, they are faced with these enormous costs to pay back over their earning careers. So I think, you know, the state really has an incentive not just to freeze tuition, but find ways to lower it so that we are not second worst, because that's not much to cheer about.
Yeah, Dean.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I've been around universities pretty much my entire adult life, and tuition goes up by a few grand every single year. So to have a situation in which a class, I think it's the class of 2017, where they'll have the same tuition for all 4 years, is pretty unusual. You know, the reality is, though, tuition is part of the cost. There's also room and board and fees, and those are not frozen. So even though you may pay the same tuition, the overall cost will probably still increase a little bit irregardless, just because of the other
cost
stuff.
Cost of food goes
yeah,
up,
all,
cost
and,
of heat.
Yeah, all that stuff. That stuff is not frozen. It's just the tuition part of the package. But still, that's a pretty nice thing to do for 4 years if you can do it.
Well, that tuition cut, state education funding cut was a major talking point for Democrats 2 years ago. They ran against the Bill O'Brien cuts mm-hmm. to state programs, especially higher education. But former House Speaker Bill O'Brien is back in the news, Jonathan, not just with his own run to return to the House, but he hopes to be Speaker again.
That's true. And so some of the Democrats are trying to capitalize on that, trying to use Bill O'Brien as their boogeyman. You know, let's not go back to that again. You know, they might cut education again. And so he is definitely back in the news. And
do you want to jump in there?
Sure. I mean, he's been for many years, he was a convenient fundraising device for Democrats. So
does it still work?
It's interesting, you know, political memories are often sort of very transient. So I've had discussions with other colleagues about, you know, how much do people really remember kind of what Bill O'Brien was all about and the Tea Party energy in 2010? I think for some kind of portion of the electorate, the people who pay fairly close attention to politics. It could be a motivating factor on either side, but it's certainly worth throwing out there for a few fundraising emails from core supporters, sure.
Rick, do you want to jump in on the whole Bill O'Brien, hoping to be Speaker, Democrats hoping to use this? Maybe it works, maybe it doesn't.
It'll be interesting to see in New Hampshire, the volatility in the House, even with a 400-seat House, they've seen huge swings in off-election years, and this, we'll see if they can do it again.
All right. Well, we just got an email from Rudy in Brookline, and our email address again is exchange@nhpr.org. Our phone number, 1-800-892-6477. Jonathan Van Fleet, before you leave us, this email is for you. Rudy in Brookline says, this year I dropped cable TV and stream entertainment over the Internet. As a result, Rudy says, I see zero capitalized TV ads. I get my candidate information by going to their websites, reading local state news online. Rudy, I hope you go to nhpr.org because we have some great campaign coverage there. Rudy says, how will a growing population of people like me in the coming years affect election ads in general? Seeing no ads has greatly reduced my election year stress. I recommend it to everyone. Rudy, thank you so much for that email. That's great. What do you think about this? Some people aren't even seeing these things.
Well, I bet that Rudy's mailbox has still got a couple things in it. But, you know,
he probably just throws in the recycling, though.
Back to Dean's point, there's such an avalanche of this stuff that there reaches a saturation point where people don't want it because they can't really sift through what's true, what's false. It becomes a white noise. And so, Rudy, congratulations.
Yeah, Rudy, thanks for the email. Rick?
But don't forget, the web is not safe either.
Right, on
primary night, Gene Shaheen bought up all the ad space available on the Concord Monitor and I think some other papers. At midnight, the night that Scott Brown won the nomination, she started running ads and just saturating the web.
So, wow, do you think she was
no
ready with that?
Well, yeah, she was ready. That's right. That's
Dean.
Right.
Yeah, well, and I think it's just a matter of time before media companies advising the candidates figure out how to insert political advertising in and around these streaming shows. I recall back in I think in 2012, I had students in my classes who were playing like Xbox, and an Obama ad would pop up in their Xbox feed. So they'll find a way. It's only temporary. But enjoy
right.
it while you can, Rudy.
Well, Rudy, it's great to hear from you. And Jonathan Van Fleet, it was great to see you. Thank you very much for being
with
us.
Laura.
That's Jonathan Van Fleet, Managing Editor for Content at the Telegraph of Nashua, and as we've been talking about, Editor of PolitiFact New Hampshire. More Friday New Hampshire News Roundup coming up in just a moment. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Coming up in this segment of the Friday New Hampshire News Roundup, suicide prevention at John Stark High, a MacArthur Genius Grant going to a New Hampshire professor, and a surprising, speaking of geniuses, recognition for Manchester. We'll talk about that in this segment of the Friday New Hampshire News Roundup with our guests, Dean Spiliotis and Rick Stevens. And first to the Queen City of Manchester, Rick Stevens, made it to a surprising national ranking this week. Lots of smart people in Manchester.
That's right. Forbes magazine has put Manchester number 5 on the list of most educated cities in America, joining some pretty renowned spots, the Research Triangle in North Carolina, Ann Arbor, Michigan, which is home of the University of Michigan, of course. They look at a lot of different things. They look at the number of people with a graduate or a professional degree, the folks with a high school diploma, number of doctors per capita. I think I'm going to ask Dean Spiliotis, though, who's our resident academic from that region, to explain why Manchester.
Well, it's all because Dean is at Southern
New
Hampshire University.
It's SNHU, and we'll throw in UNH Manchester as well down in the mill yard. It is interesting. It's almost startling because the top four, that it's, you know, University of Michigan, followed by the Research Triangle at UNC, and then Provo, Utah, which is Brigham Young University, and then all of a sudden it's Manchester. So, I think it's a function of how this Forbes did this in conjunction with Wallet Hub, which is a website I'm not familiar with, but they basically did this sort of weighted ranking of 9 or 10 different metrics, as Rick said. In essence, how you kind of define the workforce or the population is going to affect the ratings. But sure, it's great publicity. We do have a lot of technology bubbling up in Manchester. It's good universities. It's great publicity. But it is an amazing juxtaposition with these sort of major places like Ann Arbor and the UNC Research Triangle.
Well, it could be worse. We could be Texas or California.
California, right.
Of the bottom 10, they had 8 of the spots in Texas and California.
Really? So. Even with those that supposedly wildly fantastic university system in California. Yeah. Well, and my first thought, of course, was, you know, what about Hanover, right, where Dartmouth College is? But apparently they're only weighing the largest metro areas in the country.
Right.
So Hanover wouldn't even make that list. Okay, well, congratulations to Manchester. Just very quickly, gentlemen, I just want to correct any misimpressions we may have left on last week's New Hampshire Roundup during our discussion on NH1 News, the new independent television news force for New Hampshire. So for the record, NH1 programming will be broadcast on WBIN and will not replace WBIN. And WBIN reaches into northern Massachusetts with its syndicated programming, but NH1 will cover only New Hampshire news. So I just want to clear that up from last week's roundup. I want to turn now, gentlemen, to another story that caught our attention this week, a story out of John Stark Regional High School in Ware. It's about a new program aimed at suicide prevention. With us now for more on that is Casey McDermott of the Concord Monitor. And Casey, thanks for taking time out this morning.
Thanks for having me.
So why is John Stark doing this, Casey?
So I was told that they had touched on suicide prevention just kind of briefly in the past in their health classes, but the school psychologist had actually attended a program, I believe, in the Boston area that was conducted specifically geared toward high school and middle school teachers. And it was presenting this new approach to addressing issues of suicide and mental illness with people in that age group. So she really liked it. She thought that it was a great way to kind of introduce these issues to students that, you know, didn't downplay the seriousness of them, but also gave them concrete ways to respond if they were concerned about themselves or a friend.
Yeah, so this is not a statewide program. You know, it's not mandated for all health studies classes statewide, right? This is just an experiment, so to speak, at John Stark.
Right. And my understanding is that there was a bill introduced that would have mandated suicide prevention education in schools, but that did not make it past committee. But at John Stark, they're saying that they're really pleased with how it's gone so far, how it, you know, with the materials that they've received. And they also have given students, at the end of the unit, they get a card where they can fill out whether they feel as though they need to talk to someone about either themselves or a friend. And they pledged that they would follow up with those students within 24 hours. So whether that's, you know, a staff member speaking with them or being able to reach out to the guidance office, they are, you know, going to give students the appropriate resources to deal with that.
What about the concern, Casey, that you sometimes hear, and I'm not saying that you heard this at John Stark, but I have heard some people say, you know, look, we're not quite sure how to talk to this age group about this. We don't want to suggest this as an option to kids who might be struggling. There's still some stigma or fear that if you talk about it, you might actually be, you know, encouraging it.
Right. Well, I think that, you know, based on my conversations with those in the mental health community, not only at John Stark but elsewhere, that it is really important to talk about it in a way that stresses that there are a lot of resources available to someone who might be, you know, struggling with mental illness or just in a really, you know, difficult time in their lives. So the way that they presented at John Stark is it's part of other materials that, you know, touch on alcohol use, sexuality, other issues that students might be dealing with that could play into their mental well-being at that time in their lives. And the thing that I got from the people I spoke with at John Stark was that, you know, oftentimes teenagers and high school students will know that a peer is struggling long before a teacher or another official at a school. So what they're trying to do is to teach people to look out for each other, basically, and tell them that, you know, it's okay to seek out help for a friend if you're seriously concerned about them. You don't need to be worried about ratting someone out, because I know that's a concern among high school students.
Absolutely,
sometimes.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah.
So, Casey, what do you pull out of this, having covered this story and talked to students and talked to teachers? What's the big takeaway for you from this?
I think that talking to teachers, I admittedly have not spoken with students about it, but the teachers are really encouraged that, you know, this will be the beginning of a conversation. Their plan is to roll it out in health classes. It started last week, and they're eventually looking to expand it so that every student who comes through John Stark, will eventually take it as part of their health curriculum. And they're hoping that it'll have a positive impact for the reasons I mentioned previously.
All right, Casey, thank you very much for talking to us this morning. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
That's Casey McDermott, reporter for the Concord Monitor, again, updating us on a new program at John Stark regional high school in Ware, aimed at suicide prevention. Gentlemen, any thoughts from either of you on this? I know that I was at back-to-school night last night at Concord High School. They don't have suicide prevention there. But in health class, they do make the kids, one of their assignments is to list 10 people in the Concord High community that you can reach out to if you were struggling. So that's not exactly suicide prevention, but it does seem to be sort of on the same tack. You know, if you're struggling, you're not alone. Again, it was interesting to hear about that from Casey McDermott. The number for you to join us here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. You can find us on Facebook or Twitter if you'd like as well. Gentlemen, one of my favorite stories this week has to do with a hardworking professor at UNH, Tom Zhang. I hope I'm pronouncing that right, Dean. He's a MacArthur genius. I love that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, it's great that he won this fellowship, but his story is so interesting and inspiring that it's almost sort of beyond just winning this grant. Yes, the MacArthur Foundation gives out these grants every year. I think 21 people got them this time around. They're called genius grants, but they're really geared towards picking out people who are doing kind of things that are exceptionally creative and interesting and have the potential for having an impact in the future. You know, sometimes it sort of meets a more traditional notion of genius than others, but they're all kind of really interesting, creative people doing unusual work. You get $625,000 over 5 years to use however you see fit. And what's so interesting about the UNH professor is, you know, he was educated in China and did a doctorate at Purdue University here in the U.S., had difficulty getting a professorship, got hired at UNH as a lecturer and as adjunct, I believe, teaching calculus, had been working on this proof in private, showed up at a conference at Harvard University, unveiled it, and people were just stunned. And I believe now he's a full professor at UNH. He's had other job offers. Very, very modest, humble individual. Said this sort of all this money, he doesn't really need it.
He said he's going to let his wife figure out what to do with
exactly.
it.
Yeah, so exactly. It's a wonderful story and an example of someone with real talent being recognized. So congratulations to him. And there are no strings attached to this money. You can do whatever you want with it.
Yeah.
His story really is great. You mentioned he was educated in China. He grew up during the Cultural Revolution then, but he couldn't even finish high school. He had to buy his own math books. He basically taught himself the subject. I would try to explain his bounded gap. I believe a bounded prime gap theory, but I went into journalism for a reason.
Not good
math
with numbers.
Is not my thing. So.
Well, it's interesting. My younger boy was working on a prime number project this morning for some homework that, shock, shock, wasn't done last night. And I said, you know, there's a guy right here in New Hampshire. So that caught his attention. Let's go back to our listeners, gentlemen. And Robert's calling from Surrey. Hi, Robert. Thanks for joining the Friday New Hampshire News Roundup.
Hi. Thanks, Laura. I'm a physician assistant. I work at the Brattleboro Retreat over in Vermont, but I live here in Surrey. And I really appreciate your bringing up the suicide prevention topic. And the word stigma was used, which I think is important because the whole area of mental illness, especially among teenagers, still seems to be stigmatized. And I think suicide prevention is very, very important. We deal with that subject every day, but it also sort of goes to the end of the problem. And I think demystifying mental illness and removing the stigma and helping educate kids about depression, anxiety, and the kind of things that lead to suicidality is super important, and even more so than the physical health, which is something that kids should learn about as well. But the mental health is so tied into the school community and the way that the children deal with each other that I hope that the schools are on a track to educate more thoroughly about not only once it gets to the point of needing to prevent suicide, but to avoid the kind of bullying and looking out for each other with depression and what the signs might be.
Yeah. So good that health classes are no longer just talking about, you know, staying physically fit and not doing drugs and alcohol and sexual relationships, but they're also looking at mental health. And so I really appreciate hearing from you, Robert, given that you're you're in this field. And we'll probably be following up on this issue in a later program. Gentlemen, at this point in the program, we often talk about what we're doing next week. And I want to hog a little time here from you and then definitely hear what you guys are up to next week. But next week on The Exchange, we are kicking off a series of candidate conversations at UNH Law's Rudman Center. So on Monday, we'll be talking to Scott Brown and then Governor Hassan on Wednesday. You can check our website for more details about attending, about the forums, about who else will be coming up on our forums. We're going to be talking to all 8 candidates for major office here in the Granite State. All forums will be broadcast on The Exchange the morning after. So we're talking to Scott Brown Monday night, we'll broadcast that Tuesday. Talking to Governor Hassan on Wednesday night, we'll broadcast that on Thursday. Right now, though, you can send us your questions before these events. Email them for Scott Brown or Maggie Hassan. That's who we're talking to next week. exchange@nhpr.org. Post them on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange, all one word. So I really want to encourage everyone to send us your questions for Scott Brown or Maggie Hassan. And a little bit later, we'll let you know who else is coming up. So big, big week for us here on The Exchange next week. How about you, Rick? What are you going to be covering?
Well, I think I may just come to your candidate night.
That sounds good.
we're also going to be into the political realm. We're going to take a page out of Jonathan and the Nashville Telegraph's book and do some fact-checking, not on specific accusations, but on some of the broader thematic campaign notions that have been coming up. For example, the phrase that the Democratic Party uses consistently with Walt Havenstein is, his name is always preceded by failed CEO. So we want to take a look at his business history there. Some other thematic fact checks to go on with the AP. And then we'll also we'll be there for John Boehner is coming to town. He's going to campaign for Frank Ginta, I think. Also got some big-name campaigners coming up. The biggest of all so far, anyway, is next month with Bill Clinton coming to the Jefferson
Jackson. That's right, coming in October. Yeah. I appreciate what you're saying, Rick, though, about not just sort of here's a fact in an ad or here's a fact that someone threw out in a debate, but these thematic facts, you know, failed CEO. Well, is that really true? Or talking about Scott Brown and his ties to big oil, you know, that's another one, another theme.
Those are exactly the kind of things that we'll be looking at to try and, again, what Jonathan's and I hope everyone's paying attention to those fact checks because they really are the best way to cut through all the static, all the white noise that Dean mentioned earlier. They'll do the work for you and they'll tell you what's there.
Yeah. Dean, how about you?
It is interesting, Rick. I know, like you, I get emails from the respective parties, and every Democratic Party email on Havenstein is failed CEO. I don't even if I see the failed, I already know what the email is about. And those kinds of shorthands are an integral part of the campaign narrative, and there's every reason to challenge them on both sides. It's all for me, it's all about the politics this time of year. I'm interested to see Speaker Boehner come back. He was here for Frank Ginta 2 years ago. He's doing it again. I think Bobby Jindal is coming back, and he's someone who's mentioned all the time for years now as a potential presidential candidate. And
Governor of Louisiana, right?
From Governor of Louisiana, yes. I'm going to be sort of in the middle of things, listening to your interviews and trying to get a little time with some of the other candidates.
Yeah, so sitting down with the candidates, talking to them, Dean, and putting the interviews up on your website.
Yeah, when are we doing? We put links. There are a couple coming in the next few weeks, and I will put links up on my website.
Yeah, all right. Well, again, I want to encourage everybody to send their questions in to our forums. You can email us your questions for Scott Brown and Maggie Hassan. That's who we've got next week on Monday and on Wednesday, exchange@nhpr.org. Post them on our Facebook page, NHPR Exchange, all one word. Again, our forums will be on Monday and Wednesday night at the Rudman Center at UNH Law, and then we'll be broadcasting them next morning. So stay tuned for that. Send your questions in if you'd like. We'd love to hear from you. Other stories, Rick Stevens, that might be digging into at the Associated Press. You talked about the poverty rate, food stamps. I wonder if you guys are going to be crunching those numbers a little bit more. It's kind of confusing.
I anticipate we will. We've actually a non-political story that we've got coming up, too, is on the Ware police chief. The town of Ware police department has been sort of a train wreck for a couple of years.
It's quite a story, that whole situation.
They hired a police chief to come in and reform it. He was known as a reformer in New Haven, Connecticut, John Valleca. And now he's been accused of harassing and threatening a female subordinate. So he's actually had a restraining order put out against him. So we'll have a story this weekend on that.
All right, and you have a full plate for you guys, but you have a new Statehouse reporter.
We do, Kathleen Ronayne, yes, from the Concord Monitor. She is wonderful and smart. As a matter of fact, she's up at the Highland Games today getting reaction from folks with Scottish roots to the Scotland independence.
It's kind of a ready-made story for you. You know, Dean, we were remiss. We did not talk at all this hour about New Jersey Governor Chris Christie coming to the state yet again.
Yes, he was here. He did a twofer. He was here for Walt Havenstein and Scott Brown. And, you know, whenever he's up here, it's a big story, big crowds. I watched the coverage to see if Brown and Havenstein kind of got lost in the crowd. And I think they were a little bit more proactive this time about staying right next to Mr. Governor Christie so that they got the kind of coverage they wanted.
All right. Well, lots of fun, guys. And thank you very much for being here today. Rick Stevens, it was good to see you. Thank you for your time.
Great to be here.
That's Rick Stevens, Northern New England correspondent for the Associated Press. Dean Spiliotis, thank you as always.
Sure thing, Laura.
Dean Spiliotis, civic scholar in the School of Arts and Sciences at Southern New Hampshire University and author of the website nhpoliticalcapital.com. The Exchange is a production of NHPR. The senior producer is Ellen Grimm. The producer is Faith Mikesell. Our engineer is Dan Colgan. Today it's Dave Darman. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord, and I'm Laura Kanoy.